government of the United States was allowed to do this. Of course, we've been following. They have some extremely, let's say, loose guidelines for their social media content team, both at DHS and the White House, which really does a great job. You know, I could see conservatives love it. I mean, it's a real blast. But you could see some truly sort of twisted lefties, some very invested lefties. This could be some pretty significantly triggering material. I mean, straight up like MK Ultra style, you know, adding this, you know, this very sort of triggering nostalgic song with what, you know, a conservative person watches and sees justice being brought to illegal immigrants. But, you know, someone sufficiently left sees this as like Nazis, you know,
The
Pokemon mixed with Nazi imagery.
There's a couple things that come to mind. One, the sort of trolling aspect of this makes me think that this is the reason why we said it's propaganda is because, you know, part of the harsh reality of this administration with this illegal immigration topic is rounding up the criminals and, you know, ripping families apart and, you know, all those leftist arguments about getting in. It's a very unpleasant thing to do to disrupt different communities, whether they're legally or illegally, hopefully mostly illegal, and to bring them in and detain them and blah, 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 blah. So it's just kind of a horrific thing in a sense. You know, I know it's justice for Americans and everything else,
in the case that it is families and things like
right, that's
that,
what I'm saying. Not all of them are, but
this
yes, they get caught
particular
up in this
piece
whole thing.
Of media does a good job of picking the most gang member looking right. Gang members.
Right. And so it is one of the more horrific, not horrific, but it just uncomfortable things that this administration is doing. And so what do? You bring up nostalgia, you bring a little humor. And so everyone's kind of laughing and just enjoying themselves and getting amped about it. Right. The second thing that I find curious is that this implies, I don't know if they meant to or not, but it implies that illegal immigrants are akin to Pokemon, right? Yeah, like animals. Actual Pokemon, like creatures that are, I didn't really watch a whole lot of Pokemon, but as far as I understand, the Pokemon themselves are fairly neutral. Like they're not like good or bad. It kind of depends on the owner and how they use the Pokemon. Am I wrong about this?
Yeah,
or
they're just animals.
They're just like creatures, right? They're
trained to fight.
trained to fight. So even that aspect of it is kind of like, okay, a little dehumanizing, I suppose, but it does play into what the Republicans and the conservatives think of some of these individuals who are here illegally. I'm not even defending the illegal nature of them being here. It's just the fact that they have to dehumanize them to justify some of the imagery and stuff going on. So,
and the controlling the message. The conservative response to that would be that many of these particular illegal immigrants dehumanize themselves by committing crimes,
not
just
course.
The crime of crossing the border, but gang violence and all cartel activity, you know, drug stuff. Anyways, but that's not the only one. There is another one that included Theo Von here. Now, Theo Von is a podcaster who sort of inexplicably only to, even in his own perception of the world, somehow became incredibly popular. He was in the group of podcasters who, you know, had J.D. Vance on the show, meet with Trump, you know, part of the 2024 election. And he's, for those who don't know, sort of a mullet-headed kind of Southern comedian
guy.
A little bit sort of loosey-goosey when it comes to sort of intellectual rigor, but he's a comedian, so that's the thing. But he showed up in a DHS video as well.
Yeah. And
oh, is it gone?
The video has been taken down because...
Oh, my gosh.
Did you not know this?
Well, I just watched it before the show.
Oh, yeah. They took it down because Theo Von, yesterday, after the DHS published this video, the video was Theo Von at the beginning saying something to the effect of, like, I heard you got deported. Bye. You know, and then they do this, like, banger video type thing. Well, Theo Von came out. He said, yo, DHS, I didn't approve to be used in this. I know you know my address, so send a check. And please take this down And please keep me out of your banger deportation videos. When it comes to immigration, my thoughts and heart are a lot more nuanced than this video allows. Bye, which is the, that was like the big punchline of the video was bye, you know, saying bye to the illegal immigrants. And you know what? To the DHS's credit, they took down the video. So there you go.
To their credit, for they Theo did Vaughn. Take it down. Now, I will say it is the internet. So once something's gets taken down. I did link it there for you. So we might as well watch it.
Let me see here.
You got to get the vibe for it. Because part of it is many, especially young people or people who spend time on TikTok or whatever. Again, now this is the function by which the brainwashing on TikTok happens is through these MK Ultra, derivative strategies, including repeated songs, repeated sounds, repeated soundtracks. These sorts of things. They appear, you know, thousands of times, and they're fun, and people use them for different purposes. But, straight from the MK Ultra documents, the repeated use of sounds and images in various forms is part of the programming. So, once this audio starts, it will immediately bring to mind a lot of things for people who have been sufficiently sort of exposed to it. But here's the video.
Heard you got deported, dude. Bye.
2 million in 250 days. What was that?
I was just going to say it starts giving deportation statistics. We can read them just as you play it here. I'll read them. Self-deported, 400,000 deportations. You can just play it. I'll just say it.
They simply stopped coming. They're not coming anymore. We're getting a lot of credit, but they're not coming anymore.
Leave now. Yeah, at the end. What is that song, by the way? I hear it in a whole bunch of videos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This particular song originally was used to create sort of like warm, heartfelt, love your life, achieve your dreams type of content. And it was used that way for many years. And then once the trolls got their hands on it, it started to be used in sort of other ways, like usually with sort of unpopular opinions. In this example, deportation is good. See you later. Sorry, bro. And then all this great information about deportation. It used to be that this, the content with this music was like, it'll start out with somebody in the beginning, kind of like Theo Vaughn, be like, I just lost my job, but now I know I'm meant to achieve my dreams. And it goes on, and then like it'll tell a story about how they got fired, but then started their own business or whatever. I'm kind of just making up an example. But it's very like emotional. It's very like supposed to be uplifting. It's supposed to be, try to give you some good feelings as you're scrolling through the trash
I've seen
heap, that is
were
the
like,
internet.
Like the students in an elementary school giving like the janitor a gift, like a whole, all the students giving the janitor a gift and, the janitor breaks down crying, stuff like that. Like that's the kind of thing I've seen with this music. But now the DHS is using it for a pro deportation video using the likeness of Theo Vaughn, and he didn't like it. He was not happy about it.
Yeah, and what's really interesting, and I see this now, this is kind of, let's say, bring it around to the theory of everything here, not just the show fun videos for fun. But so the way that this kind of connects with the whole thing we've been tracking for quite some time now is we're actually watching with the transition of politics, specifically with young people, because of course it used to be the rule. If you're young, you're Democrat. If you're young, you're left. That's what you are. When you get older, you become conservative, right? And young people are primarily the ones who are subjecting themselves to this constant stream of mind control, constant stream of audio triggers, constant stream of, information overload, putting them in this very sort of mushy kind of pliable mindset that has been very helpful for the establishment to kind of control the flow of culture from kind of the bottom up, for lots of reasons, economic reasons, political reasons, etc. Well, now these triggers have been shown to be so effective, and they're so effective also because you don't have to strap a patient to a chair and pry their eyeballs open and, you know, program them with repetitive stuff in some sort of CIA black site. We are all subjecting ourselves to these social engineering tactics for fun. It's how we fill time. It's how we fill the time from sitting on the toilet to getting up off the toilet. It's how we fill time between phone calls. It's how we fill any silence is now being filled with these sort of highly targeted, very effective strategies for creating a malleable individual. And we're doing it for free, and we're doing it for fun. And now what we see, the reason we see this from the White House, the DHS, we've seen the Trump administration really throw out all convention and just say, hey, we know how to do this. We don't, all we got to do is put our message with these sounds, with these memes, because we already have a programmable young population, and we're going to do it. The right conservatives, they have, you know, not been successful for one reason or another in the past. When I was young, it was, you know, Republicans are old and stodgy. They don't know me. They don't understand the young people.
And well, neocons. They were old and stodgy.
Yeah, perhaps. And they, you know, when we were young guns, we hadn't lived through 20 years of our lives being constantly subjected to this MKUltra process on a daily basis on purpose. But now we have kids in their 20s who have now pretty much spent every conscious moment of their lives participating in making themselves a sort of programmable computer. And the administration, from the highest ends of the federal government in the most powerful country that humanity has ever seen, gives this impression that it's sort of stooping down to culture's level, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of, even you show that, you know, you show this to other people, you go, wow, the White House is really, wow, they're really stooping down to social media. They're really stooping down to memes, you know. Mm-hmm. Of course, if you're a conservative, you like it, and it's, you know, you're a big fan of it. But if you were to show it to anybody over the age of maybe 45 or 50, the idea that your government would participate in sort of playful types of social engineering is kind of, it's almost offensive in a way.
Yeah.
But all of this to say, the use of the establishment of all establishments, the federal government of the United States, finally sort of deploying explicitly these very specific, very effective training modules, which are these, you know, meme formats, meme music, things like this. We are literally watching the youth of this country shift towards conservatism in an unimaginable way. We have never, ever in the history of this country watched the younger generations move from the liberal side to the conservative side. And it just so happens to be at the exact moment that the federal government starts deploying these training, these trigger devices in memery, things like this, the already installed software into the young people, but also older people. You know, we're just as at risk of course partaking in this kind of stuff. So I mean, we're just watching right in front of us not just the attempt for social engineering, but we're seeing successfully deploying the tech training, the social engineering, and the federal government establishment. And never have I ever seen the results so clearly reflect what we know of, you know, of the conspiracy theory, tinfoil hat, you know, aspect of social media. We've never seen it work so quickly, so effectively, insofar that it's absolutely shattered any historical trend in recorded history. So, yeah, so it's pretty, pretty impressive. Yeah,
but back to that verse I mentioned earlier, you know, do you step aside, you call out what it is for what it is with stuff like this. It's like, okay, it's propaganda. It's also, you know, a clever way to draw attention to what the government is doing and maybe play into what the conservatives and the young conservatives, how they relate to the government, very well crafted in that way. And if you're, if people are coming to Christ because of it, like if somebody's like, you know, hey, what was the, and maybe this is why we need to have that testimonial, the Young Christian Testimonial podcast, because, you know, we might hear testimonials where they're like, you know, I was on the fence about everything. Charlie Kirk happened. And then I was more, you know, inclined to go to church, but then I saw this DHS video, with Theo Vaughn. And I was like, that's it, man. I'm going to church. I'm opening the Bible. So it's like, okay, you can't really get in the way of that. But
maybe, I mean, the other side of that, and I want you to finish, The other side of that is that simultaneously, this increase of interest in Jesus could actually be the natural inoculant, like the natural medicine.
Yes.
Because, you know, Jesus is the medicine for the sickness of mind control or social engineering. You know, it's always been that way. Well, but, I think, you know, we are in a different time, so who knows?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's... whatever way to get them in the door, what happens after that is, you know, really up to the community, the families, the people around them, and how they build up or perhaps tear down some of the people that decide to seek truth and faith in Christ. But there's a couple scriptures, because, you know, I just want to throw in a couple more scriptures here about this. And, you know, these are familiar scriptures, but I think we can apply them to these types of situations. 2 Corinthians 11, verse 3, I'm afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his cunning, your thoughts will be led astray from a sincere and pure devotion to Christ. And that, man, this is hits me really deep, because what I'm seeing a lot of is this sort of mixture of political and spiritual type of movement when it comes to people seeking God. It's like, it wasn't just a spiritual journey. It was a political one that really drove them into that universe. So, and we know how, when politics is used, how manipulative that is to a whole society, generations. So, you know, just keeping guard of what you're actually, what is it that you're actually, you know, abiding to, or what is it that you're actually seeking, is important there. And then Galatians 5 verses 7 and 8, you were running so well. Who has obstructed you from obeying the truth? Such persuasion does not come from the one who calls you. And yeah, again, persuasion, all these little videos and all these things, they're little persuasion machines, to get people to think a certain way or behave a certain way, react a certain way. And it's not always, or it never usually is the case that it's one video that does it. It's over time, right? It takes a while for stuff to really seep in.
Yeah, years even.
So, you know, we can't really say that this one video or this, that one creator or whatever, but it's sort of the cultural shift, the amalgamation of all of it that tends to be, what drives people to do what they do. And so, yeah, I would imagine that it's very akin to the wheat and the tares, that we will see the rise of a lot of people coming to faith, coming to Christ and finding God in this situation or these times, but also those who say they are, but maybe aren't really, you know, they're just kind of doing it because it's culturally cool, which, you know, that's been kind of, I think we've been through this as a country in the last century. And I think it resulted in a couple big wars. But, you know, that's my caution, because I'm seeing a lot of fairly young influencers that are really buying into some of the more militant responses to some of the stuff. And, you know, again, the last time this happened, it resulted in Vietnam, basically, you know, it was sort of the pinnacle of all that anti-communism talk for 30, 40 years. So if that's the pattern that we're, the trajectory that we're on, it's probably not a great thing. So we gotta do our best to compartmentalize, might be too strong of a word, but at least understand or catalog how we deal with this. You know, if we're talking about the propaganda, let's isolate the propaganda, show the propaganda for what it is, understanding that, hey, this might help somebody who's in a whole different place, a different part of their journey, to get closer to God. And so I don't, it's hard because you don't want to get in the way of that, but also you don't want to enable propaganda, you know, to just prevail. So, you know, it's a tough job, Basil. It's a very nuanced job. And I'm glad Theo Vaughn is thinking nuanced. You know, that's the most startling thing that to me is that he's out here saying, hey, my heart with this situation is more nuanced. And I actually think a lot more people are in that place of nuance, and they're not necessarily like all in for government or all in for anti-government or whatever. Things are a little more complicated than
what
is presented to us.
Mm-hmm. I do want to give some credit to everybody on the live stream. It's kind of an unusual day in the chat. There are a number of pretty obvious trolls coming in and like trying, you know, trying to like trigger people into like arguing about Trump or Republican versus Democrat or something. And I'm sitting here go by and it's like a lot of them are very obviously like AI sort of generated little trigger things to try to get people, you know, arguing or whatever, or defending Trump or something, mostly defending Trump, trying to bait you into sort of politically defending Trump. And I'm sitting here going, oh, geez, how are we going? Okay. And proud to say, it looks like not a single Canarian is taking the bait. So good job, Canarians.
You know, Canarians, underrated. Underrated when it comes to being informed and you know, standing on some good solid truth and not getting pulled into whatever is waved in front of us. I mean, that's been kind of our thing, right?
That's what we're talking about. It's a defense mechanism. Our hope is that Canarians are able to recognize things like this and not instantly get sort of dragged into whatever sort of internet rage
debate.
Slop
yeah, rage
that
debate.
Somebody's trying to just recreationally argue with Christians or whatever. Okay, one more, just an interesting little thing here, Gons. We saw something like this happen pop up, then we saw another thing pop up, and I just thought we should bring it to the attention of the Canarians, because oftentimes this kind of stuff, if you can spot the trend, spot the pattern, it'll give you a little bit of insight into, I don't know, next time something weird happens. Recently, it popped up. This was tweeted by the New York Post. Trump Epstein Best Friends Forever statue removed from D.C.'s National Mall. And it says here, a garish statue of President Trump and late pedophile Jeffrey Epstein was mysteriously erected on the National Mall on Tuesday and removed by Wednesday morning. And the bronze sculpture stood about 12 feet tall, appeared to show both men in a merry dance with Trump's left hand gripping Epstein's right. One of the plaques under the figure said, quote, we celebrate the long lasting bond between President Donald J. Trump and his closest friend, Jeffrey Epstein, and attribute the shunt to an anonymous group called The Secret Handshake. It's obviously a reference to the alleged birthday letter written by Trump, or rather Donald. Simply Donald. It says, quote, we're a very small group of citizens who are using art, irony, and humor to express social commentary and spark political conversation in public spaces, the group told USA Today. The U.S. Park police hauled the installation away before daybreak Wednesday, telling WUSA 9 that it wasn't in compliance with a permit that initially allowed it to remain through Sunday evening, though the department did not specify the issue. And then it goes into talking about Trump and Epstein. And this reflects a situation. You can see, make note, Guns, kind of scroll through this. Make note about where the statue is.
Mm-hmm. You can see the Capitol building in the background there.
You can see the Capitol, yeah. You see it's on the sandy area. There's a cement divider between it and the lawn and things like this. It reminded us of something that just recently popped up, a different statue that was placed in apparently the exact same place.
Yeah,
and this was the Trump Bitcoin statue. Now, don't have an article for this one, but this was a statue that appeared, I think it was last week, right?
Yeah.
A golden statue of Trump, which has been an interesting theme for many years now, and especially, of course, in the Christian community. We bring conversations about the golden calf and crafting idols and, you know...
The golden age. Where's the golden age? I'm waiting for the golden age.
Idol out of Trump, and the left says loves to say that Christians worship Trump, you know, this whole narrative. But in this case, he was standing and holding out just a big Bitcoin, but it's in the exact same place as this other one. Now, apparently, as is revealed in this news thing here, this area, I would guess, seems to be a place that you can get permits to put a statue temporarily. And I had never heard of this before, but it's kind of an interesting aspect of this little piece of law. And like, you've got all these different organizations or artists or people just sort of crafting temporary statues to place here. It's very sort of Burning Man-y, you know, where it's just meant to be a not permanent, temporary, but they obviously put a lot of work into these things and whatever. So I thought it'd be interesting to start maybe paying a little bit more attention to the statues that get put there, whether permitted or unpermitted. But, you know, these sort of patterns start revealing themselves, even when no sort of human intelligence is putting these patterns into play. But I just thought it'd be interesting, especially considering the importance of A, statues in the sort of Masonic and occult architecture of Washington, D.C. altogether.
Yeah.
And how, you know, it's sort of laid out in this, sort of talismanic seal of Solomon, sigil magic sort of architecture of the entire city. I'd be interested. I probably should have done it, but we got this right before the show. Kind of pick out this place on a top-down map of Washington, D.C., like see where it sits in the pentagram structure of the city planning, you know? Could have something interesting.
And the Capitol building being where the apotheosis of George Washington, isn't that not in the rotunda there on the ceiling? So, yes, this is where
is indeed.
Men become gods is where it is. And I don't know.
And the layout being the Washington Monument, then the reflecting pool, and then the Capitol building being the womb of ISIS, the Washington Monument being the phallus of Osiris, the space between, you know, putting a statue between those two sort of power centers, you know, could have some sort of, some metaphoric or occult significance of impregnating ideas or something or other.
Yeah, some esoteric messaging going on here. About
Bitcoin go to moon.
It's gonna moon, Basil. It's gonna moon. The golden age is upon
us.
All right. Well, you know, we identified some things about a year ago. Let me see here. I actually did pull up the episode number. It was episode number 774, Hole in None. We discussed the alleged assassination attempt of Donald Trump, not the one in Pennsylvania, but one in Mar-a-Lago. And we have an update from the individual. His name is Ryan Ruth. And if you recall, we found some footage of Ryan Ruth in, like, I can't remember if it was BBC or it was just some random news reporting years before. Let me see if I can go through the show notes here.
I think it was a CNN affiliate or something.
Well, yeah, he was, Time Magazine, who's Ryan Routh, wrote a book urging Iran. So there's a bunch of weird stuff about this guy.
Yeah, he volunteered in Ukraine. He did fundraising for the Ukraine war. He volunteered to fight. He has this weird long history. He appeared on, again, I believe it was a CNN affiliate in like Romania for some art project. Just like a bunch of weird stuff. And remember, he's the fella who was posted up on the golf course with a gun and body armor and some things was waiting for Donald Trump to pass by on the golf course to assassinate him. But the Secret Service agents saw, in the most cartoonish sort of Wile E. Coyote sort of fashion, saw the barrel of his rifle like sticking out of a bush, sort of wasn't Bugs a dog? Bunny cartoon or something.
A dog or something caught it. I forget the details of the story.
No, but it was there's two Secret Service agents who
wasn't a robot dog. Okay. He wrote a book called Ukraine's Unwinnable War, The Fatal Flaw, Democracy, World Abandonment, and the Global Citizen, Taiwan, Afghanistan, North Korea, and the End of Humanity. I mean, you can kind of tell where his mind is at. Anyway, update. And actually, that was almost exactly a year ago. It was September of 2024 when all this happened. Update here. And that we'll introduce a PSYOP.
PSYOPs.
Ryan Ruth tried to stab himself with a pen after guilty verdict in Trump assassination attempt trial. And it says here, the trial of Ryan Wesley Ruth came to a dramatic end Tuesday when he started stabbing himself in the neck with a pen after a Florida jury found him guilty of attempting to assassinate Donald Trump last year on a golf course. After just 2.5 hours of deliberations, the panel also found Ruth guilty of assaulting the Secret Service agent who rousted him from his hiding place and guilty of 3 federal gun charges stemming from the September 15th, 2024 incident. Ruth, who had pleaded not guilty to all the charges, now faces life in prison when he is sentenced. The verdict came not long after Ruth capped his 2-week trial, during which he served as his own attorney. Oh boy. By delivering a brief and disjointed closing argument, during which he tried to argue that there was no crime because he never fired a shot at Trump.
Yeah. Good. Nice. Good luck.
He did not. I mean, man, a ChatGPT question would have told him not to go with that one, but you know, it's whatever. But just 12 minutes into his monologue, U.S. District Judge Eileen Cannon interrupted Ruth and scolded him for ignoring her order to, quote, stay within the bounds of the case, after he started complaining that he wasn't allowed to put more witnesses on the stand. With the jury out of earshot, Ruth then asked Cannon whether the public defenders who initially represented him, Christy Moletello and Renee Michelle Sivola, could wrap up his closing argument if the judge interrupted him again. Cannon said no, and when the jury returned, Ruth argued that, quote, to merely have a weapon in the presence of another does not mean intent. But after Ruth brought up the January 6th riots on Capitol Hill and began talking about Ukraine, Founding Father Patrick Henry, and the common man, Cannon put a halt to his argument. In total, Ruth spoke for about 42 minutes. Wow. A 59-year-old Hawaii resident. What is up with Hawaii? What's going on in Hawaii? Resident and former Trump supporter Ruth was. Okay. I'm going to ignore some of this stuff because it is CNBC.
Yeah, it is filled with the, yes, there. We've gone through the Ruth thing. Mainstream media, again, did the same thing, tried to make him into some sort of right-wing, you know, Nazi.
Because he's white, so
he's fighting for Ukraine, he hates Trump. It's just madness.
Okay, Ruth is charged with attempting to assassinate a major presidential candidate and assaulting a federal officer, plus several firearm violations. The government delivered its closing argument first with prosecutor Christopher Brown telling the court that the suspect had planned to kill Trump, quote, for a long, long time. Quote, it is not every case where the defendant writes his intent down on a piece of paper, Brown said during his closing statement. Brown was referring to note Routh wrote before he was arrested. It was addressed, quote, to the world, and stated plainly, this was an assassination attempt of Donald Trump, end quote. Quote, this is not a whodunit, Brown told jurors. Starting with the pre-trial hearing and throughout the trial in federal court here, Ruth was admonished repeatedly by Cannon for disrupting the proceedings and asking witnesses questions that the judge deemed outside the scope of the case or irrelevant. On Monday, Ruth asked his own ballistics expert, Michael McClay, quote, does it take a special kind of person to be able to take another person's life? Cannon called for a break before McClay could answer and later told Ruth the question was, quote, far outside the bounds. Ruth called two character witnesses on the stand who testified that he was not violent and is a, quote, jolly person. After that, Ruth announced, quote, I will not testify. When Cannon asked the accused man if he had enough time to think this momentous decision through, Ralph answered, a year. Ralph was arrested by Secret Service. He's not a lawyer. He reluctantly agreed to the public defender. Yeah. Federal prosecutors called 38 witnesses over a span of 7 days who placed Ruth at the scene and testified that the suspect could have killed Trump had he not been caught. Ruth called three witnesses and was done presenting his case before lunchtime Monday. The closing arguments came just 2 days after Trump spoke at a memorial service for the popular but polarizing conservative Tardik Kirk. Cannon was appointed to be the bench to the bench by Trump and is the same judge who dismissed the charges against the president after he was accused of mishandling classified documents at his home in Mar-a-Lago. Nothing about how he tried to stab himself with a pen right after it happened. Why would you put this in the headline and not talk about the fact that he tried to stab himself with a pen in the courtroom?
Yeah, that's interesting. They didn't put any of the details. And the details were available. So they read out the guilty thing. He waits a moment, takes a pen, starts stabbing himself in the neck. He gets taken out by, I think he like gets up and runs, or he gets grabbed by the marshals or the police officers. They bring him out of the courtroom. They shackle him hands, feet, and waist and bring him back in so they can finish reading his sentence. That's a hard thing to do, to try to kill yourself with a pen by stabbing yourself in the neck. This man is obviously bonkers in one way or another. I'm not even saying like certifiably, maybe legally crazy or psychotic or something. But you know, we've known this guy is a total wacko. Even just the fact, I mean, just think of how disconnected you have to be from reality to try to even make the case that just because I was hiding in a bush with a gun and body armor, and
just because
note,
I wrote a manifesto of my plan,
I technically didn't break the law because I never actually shot him. You got to be pretty delusional for that to be sort of a viable thing. While obviously his public defenders, he's like, no, I didn't actually break the law because I didn't shoot. And they're like, Ryan, I'm sorry to tell you this. No, you're in big trouble, mister. Like, we need to really figure this out. No, no, no. You're a bad lawyer, public defender. This is a bad idea. I got this. Kind of reminds me, unfortunately, of some of the, what are they? Kind of some of the stories. There are some good stories about sort of sovereign citizen folk who end up successfully like bringing sort of natural law into the courtroom and kind of, you know, find justice. But more often than not, it's somebody who's really confident in some stuff they read online and insists upon being their own lawyer, and it never goes well.
Well, in this case, you know, the point was made because of the note that he wrote that perhaps the pen is mightier than the sword, and maybe he was trying to make that point.
Whoa. You did it.
I did it. I figured it out. I figured out the thing. Now, there was some footage. We're not going to necessarily play the audio. It's really not that big of a thing, but his daughter, apparently, Ryan Roth's daughter, was walking out of the courtroom. She was storming out. You can see her kind of stomping around, very upset. And people were trying to ask her questions, and she was cursing at them and telling them to stay away and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's not
really newsworthy event, but yes, the footage does exist.
A lot of people
she was upset.
Yeah,
after
a lot of
her
people are making
tried
her
to kill himself.
Making it out to be more than might be, but.
Mm-hmm. So to go through some items so far, we have, of course, the Charlie Kirk shooting. Mm-hmm. We have the assassination. We have the ICE facility in Texas. At the same time, we also have Ryan Ruth, mm-hmm. The attempted Trump assassin. We've got all these stories stacking up, piling up, mm-hmm. Of examples of left-wing violence. And of course, it is a frustrating thing for everybody on, I'd say, anybody in the world, but especially for just people who kind of actually have a grasp on what's going on in the world. Some people call them like conservatives, you know, whatever. But you don't even have to be conservative. You just have to kind of, you know, be outside of the mind control bubble, understand how the media works and how narratives are being spun to realize, yes, there is lots of left-wing violence, no matter how much MSNBC tries to convince you that there's only left-wing violence because they're copying right-wing violence. Okay, I don't know about that, but sure. But I could not believe my eyes when I saw this. The Atlantic, an outlet we have not brought to the show in a little bit of time.
You've had a very precarious relationship with the Atlantic.
A personal favorite of mine because it is, of course, owned and operated by Steve Jobs's widow. It is not necessarily a news outlet, although they like to, you know, lead people to believe that. But they're more of a sort of culture crafting.
I like that. Culture shibboleth. Craft.
Yeah. I see my archive link did not make it into the document, so I'm going to do this real quick.
Are you even woke?
Woke up, man.
Yeah, and the Atlantic really is this sort of bastion of respectable left-wing journalism, I guess. Is that what you call it? Well, whatever they want to call it, but at least the sort of culture influencing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here we go. And here's the headline. Left-wing terrorism is on the rise.
Whoa, Atlantic. Are they turning conservative? What's going on here?
Uh-huh. They've been taken over by Nazis, the Atlantic. Left-wing terrorism is on the rise. For the first time in more than 30 years, attacks by the far left outnumber those by the far right. Okay, now let me tell you off the bat. They deploy every rhetorical and statistical trick to try to soften this as much as possible. However, we must recognize that the headline is the headline. The message is the message. But we can kind of see through some of their, again, the headline is what it is, but there's some sort of deceptive tactics at work here. But let's see what they have to say. This should be, if your liberal friends or family are worth anything, they are reading The Atlantic, and this is what they are reading. No matter how hard ideologues try to exclusively blame their political foes for acts of political violence, the truth is that violent extremists today emerge from across the political spectrum.
What? Okay. No way. No, they're lying.
It's kind of soft there, but okay. We have studied this problem. Oh, thank you.
Thanks.
The Atlantic, they've studied it. We have studied this problem and believe that our data,
oh boy,
can help illuminate an issue too often defined by partisan finger pointing.
Oh, wow, they're okay. So above the brow. Atlantic is so above the right-left paradigm. The almighty Atlantic is going to shed light on this false duality that is the right-left paradigm. I'm looking forward to it. This is great.
We would never be ideological. We would never point fingers here at the Atlantic. As part of a study to be published this week by the Center for Strategic and International Studies, a classic, we compiled and analyzed a data set of 750 attacks and plots in the United States from January 1st, 1994 to July 4, 2025.
Why those dates?
Our research, well, you'll see. Our research focuses only on incidences of terrorism. So don't worry. All those other left-wing pieces of violence, Black Lives Matter riots, looting, none of that. That's not terrorism, okay? Terrorism, which we define,
as
attacks. Again, this is the Atlantic defining it. So they are picking their own data. They are defining their own terms. and they still came out with left wing. Which we define as attacks or plots by a non-state actor attempting to achieve a political end and exert a psychological influence on a broad population. Among other details, the data set includes the types of weapons used, the intended targets, and the number of fatalities, and the ideology of the perpetrators.
You know what we before you go on, this does sort of put the, it takes the focus away from any shadow government or darker group or whatever behind the scenes that could be much more responsible for perhaps influencing these types of individuals to do what they do. It's just a, they just said it's, you know, we're looking past the right left thing, but then also they're defining it as a right left type of thing. It's pretty.
Oh yeah. No. So what we have here is the establishment organizing the data, redefining the terms, and they have to admit what we all know because we all have eyes. We all have memories. We've all been paying attention for the past 10 years. We all know the truth of this. And yet, the mainstream, the establishment, they're starting to come to the end of their rope of their ability to convince people to just not believe what they know. You know, don't believe your eyes. Don't believe your own, you know, what you hear, what you read. Don't believe everything that you see and feel going on around you. They're coming to the end of that ability. They've pushed it too far. I mean, that is one thing that sort of, I don't know, it's sort of the characteristics of our time right now is becomes more and more pitiful to watch the establishment try to tell you to not believe what you see. For example, the MSNBC guy, which is saying, you know, left wingers only commit violence and write on their bullets because of Nazis. They don't do it. They would never, you know, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Here we go. We found that left wing terrorism has increased since Donald Trump's rise to political prominence in 2016. Indeed, 2025 marks the first time in more than 30 years that left-wing attacks outnumber those from the far right. Despite its recent increase, however, left-wing terrorism is not nearly as common today as it was in the 60s and early 70s.
Oh.
Those years, so this is why they picked the dates, okay? And this is, you see this every time when they try to talk about right-wing terrorism. They started at about 1990. Because if you go back to the 80s, the 70s, and the 60s, the numbers would change immensely. But kudos for them for actually mentioning why they cherry-picked the data that they cherry-picked. Says those years marked the height of groups such as the Weather Underground and the Symbionese Liberation Army, best known for kidnapping the newspaper heiress Patty Hearst. In the 80s and early 90s, left-wing terrorism declined, while jihadist and right-wing terrorism rose. So this has always been an issue with their right-wing terrorism data, is they include jihadist terrorism. They include Islamic